Well, hello everyone, welcome back. And Father Basic, how about we continue with our exploration of theologian that have had an impact on the world and the Catholic Church, and in some cases you personally. What do you say we continue?
Let's do it. We're drawing on material from a book of mine, by the way, Brad.
Contemporary Theologians.
Yes. I deal with about 20 of them. And that book has gotten used by a number of people. Periodically, theologians will tell me, oh, yeah, I was giving a talk on von Balthasar, and I looked at your book. It makes me feel good, you know, like somebody actually uses it and so on. So, yeah, so we got that book, and you read it, and I read it, and reread it, and that becomes the basis of a conversation.
Yeah, and today's spotlight is Jacques Maritain, French Catholic philosopher, prolific author, human rights advocate. There's a bunch of other things that he did, too, obviously.
So, you always say these names better than I do. I like that.
I practice before we get here. I'm out in the car
practicing. I struggle with the pronunciation, and you come right out with it. Anyway, yes, Jacques Maritain, that's who we're going to talk about. Better give a little history.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, French. Grew up in, I think, a sort of liberal Protestant culture generally. Found it unsatisfying. One of the important things in his life was he met this young woman, Raissa, who he married, and she became Catholic with him.
Because she was Jewish.
Yeah, she was Jewish, yeah. And it was one of those marriages made in heaven. They were just so close and so together in loving poetry. And she was a poet herself, and loving poetry and art and worrying about the great questions of life. In fact, they one time, I think in my book I called it, they formed a sort of suicidal pact. I think that's overblown. But in other words, they said, we're giving ourselves 1 year to try to get over our discouragement and depression and lack of meaning in life. We're giving ourselves 1 year to try to find something that is intellectually and emotionally satisfying. So in that way, I would say Maritain still speaks to people today who are struggling to, you know, to find meaning, especially when things aren't going well and where there's so much negativity. So I think they speak to that. So they were students, and they came across a French novelist, Léon Bloy, B-L-O-Y, Léon Bloy. And they met him and became under his influence. He was telling them that we have intuitions that can put us in touch with God in a way. Intuitions, in other words, there was something inside of us thirsting for meaning, something inside of it that wanted a love that's imperishable, part of our own psyche that we all know. We have intuitions, that's what he called them, for meaning. And that spoke to Raissa and to Jacques Maritain, who were married by then. And one of Bloy's great lines, depending how you translate the French, was the only real sadness in life is not to become a saint. The only
What do you think he meant by that?
That's the great goal in life.
To live a saintly life.
Yeah. That's what we should be about, being holy people, living a saintly life, following God's will, being committed to Christ, being responsive to the Holy Spirit. The only sadness is not to become a saint. And that struck both Raissa and Jacques Maritain, and that became their life goal. So they were converted, both of them, to Catholicism, were baptized together, and live the faith together. And they were serious about it. I mean, they were going to become saints, just like Leon Boyce said they should. And they went to Mass daily. They said the rosary. They had devotion to Mary. They honored the saints. They kept all the holy days. They did the fasting and Lent. They celebrated Advent. In other words, they were totally immersed in what we'd call the Catholic world. And they lived that way the rest of their life. The other thing probably to remember about Maritain was he eventually came to the United States. He taught at Princeton University for many years. For half a century, he was known as the major Catholic intellectual in the world. In other words, he was the big figure. He was the giant of Catholic intellectual life. And I think what I would like to stress is, and this is what I did in the book too, see him as proposing what we'd call Christian humanism. He was a proponent of Christian humanism. So let's try to unpack that a little bit. So when you think about humanism, you often think of that in opposition to religion. So the humanist societies in the United States, for example, so named, will often, as part of their whole approach, say, we got to get rid of supernaturalism. Religion holds us back. Religion is fundamentally dehumanizing. That's what the great critics said. Marx said that, Freud said that, Jean-Paul Sartre said that. Religion is fundamentally dehumanizing. It keeps us in an infantile state, keeps us from making a difference in the world, puts our mind on the afterlife so we don't attend to making the world a better place. Dehumanizing. And so what I think is important for us Christians to do is to say, don't cede humanism to the secularists. In other words, and that's what Jacques Maritain said, no, there is a proper Christian humanism, an approach in faith in God, in Christ, in the power of the Spirit, a faith that helps us become more human, to develop our tangible talents. So Abraham Maslow talked a lot about self-actualization, and from a human Christian point of view, we say, well, the most actualized person ever lived is Jesus Christ. Most fulfilled is Jesus Christ. And that the Christian calling is to develop our talents, to become all we can be. God has given us certain gifts. We need to use them to make progress and to move forward. So there's a proper Christian humanism. You know, that's actually in official documents, which I know because I wrote one of them for the bishops as the ghostwriters, and that was called Empowered by the Spirit. And it was on campus ministry. I spent about 3 years of my life working on that project. I was the writer for the committee that produced it, and eventually the bishops published it. But one of the things I got in there was the phrase Christian humanism. I snuck it in.
No editor said, hey, what's this? Explain yourself.
They let that go. So it talks about Christian humanism as being a good thing, and that something we want to strive for. In campus ministry, we want to help our students become true Christian humanists, that is interested in self-actualization, interested in discovering their talents and finding the best way to use it, finding a way you can make a difference in the world. So a Christian humanism, you know, I think it's important not to just give the word to the secularists.
And humanism just standalone for some with the spiritual, it's lacking spirituality. Some people would say that, right?
Yeah,
so the Christian takes care of that.
Yeah, say, no, there's a spiritual component, yeah. So an important part of becoming a fully alive person is to be open to transcendence, open to mystery, open to something more than we are, so that the critique of the human humanisms as they're popular, and I don't want to speak badly of them, because secular humanists have helped us make great progress and helped us move forward. But I would say, you know, it becomes even a stronger message if there's openness to transcendence, if there's a realization that I can't do everything on my own. I need other human beings. I need to be a member of a community. I need a political system that allows me to be free. And a spirituality that would open up the future and not close it off. So I'm not saying that real well, but that the criticism of the secular humanists is that it doesn't go far enough, put it that way. I think we're better off if we recognize there's a spiritual component in life. And that part of the spiritual component is that we are social creatures. We're not just individuals. We are individuals, we have dignity and worth, but we're also social creatures, which means we need other people. We need healthy family life where we grow up and find our values and find our way forward. And so I think that the Christian part supplies that, or better language, it opens up even a brighter future. That might be one way of saying it.
In Marit Han's Search for Truth, he delved into Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, that's hard to figure out all out, but how can I say this? In the modern world, there were two types of followers of Thomas Aquinas. Go back to Pope Leo XIII said that we should make Thomas Aquinas, that's 12th century, he died 1274, great synthesizer. He brought together the thought of Augustine and Aristotle, pagan world and so on. The great innovator of his time and so on. So Pope Leo XIII set him up as the model. So much so, I mean, this is not just words on his part. People who were studying to get doctorates in theology in the 20th century, like my man Karl Rahner, like great Bernard Lonergan, had to write their dissertations on Aquinas. Had to write their dissertations on Aquinas. I mean, that's how strict it was, this idea that we were to be Thomists, followers of Aquinas. And each one, like Rahner, did that and found a way to show how Aquinas was open to what was going on in the modern world. That Aquinas had an idea, this gets too complicated, but let's just leave it at that, that Aquinas can help us live in a world where we can dialogue with the modern world, with secular humanists and so on. Marit Han went in another direction. He developed what we call Neo-Thomism, Neo-Scholastic, new Thomistic outlook. He was thoroughly Thomistic in everything he did. He wrote a book on art and scholasticism, showing how Aquinas could help us be more open to art. He wrote Politics and according to Aquinas. So his work was all infused totally by the thought of Thomas Aquinas and finding out his way of making that real. Now, what happened in the history of Catholicism and that Marit Han lived through was that his brand got left behind. So all the creative writing, creative work went on in the Ronerian line, or the Transcendental Thomas, as we say. The language isn't important. It was Rahner became important and Marit Han diminished in importance. And it was hard for Marit Han. The Second Vatican Council, that met from 1962 to 65, produced 16 documents, and shaped the future of the Catholic Church. We're still today under Pope Francis trying to mine the riches of Vatican II. And so Rahner loved Vatican II, thought it strikes me good. Maritain was mixed on the council. Because he was married to a Jewish woman, he thought the council did great, not just because of that, but he thought the council did great in opening up our dialogue with the Jewish community, so that the council insisted that we were the heirs of the Jewish people, and that the Jewish people had continuing significance in the world, and that we had to fight every anti-Semitism that exists, and that that word deicide, that they were God killers, had to be getting rid of. So Maritain loved that. He thought the council made great strides. But like other intellectuals, he thought the council went too far. He wrote a book called The Peasant of Garonne, which is a harsh criticism of the council, not like him at all. It's like he was a changed personality.
What was his main points of contention?
I think that's a very important question, and my own sense is that he was worried about relativism, that the council had lost the sharp lines of Catholicism, and that it was leading to too much relativism. It wasn't firm enough in maintaining doctrine. There were too many changes, in a way, that was going on, and that therefore we had to oppose that and come back to a stricter Catholicism. So in doing that, Maritain became, in the vibrant theological world, Catholic theological world, he was no longer considered. He was written off as a person that didn't speak anymore to what was going on in the real world. And so he was ignored and fell off the radar screen, as we say, while others took over. So if you're going to say then, well, how is he going to stay relevant? And I think it's because of his positive contributions. Let's get to that. One of them would be his work on human rights. So he became, in his own mind, convinced how Thomism backed human rights. Thomas Aquinas was in favor of human rights. By emphasizing human rights is the way we're going to improve the world. So he was helped to draft the Universal Human Rights by the UN in 1948. He was part of that project. I mean, he was considered within the larger secular world. If there was a Catholic public intellectual, that was Jacques Maritain. So they invited him to help produce that document, and which is right along his line. Human rights, all human rights are important. And of course, we're still fighting that and trying to make Vatican II real. Vatican II had to struggle, well, does human rights include the right to religious freedom? And that became a tough question. That was contended in the Second Vatican Council through the whole 4 years of the council. It was only at the very end that the council got around to saying, yes, religious liberty is a fundamental human right. So with that, Maritain was... he was on board with that, let's put it that way. So he made a great contribution in that way.
Tough minds and tender hearts.
Oh, good.
How about that?
I love it. Good. I'm glad you brought that. I love the phrase. I use it a lot. That was Maritain said, that's what we need in the modern world. People, human beings with tough minds, critical minds, clear thinkers, logical people. Who are willing to look at all the evidence and arrive at factual truth, philosophical truth, scientific truth, tough minds, you know, logical thinkers, reasonable people.
Resilient.
And tender hearts. I mean, sometimes when I have funerals of people that demonstrated that, I will, in my homily, bring that up, that so-and-so, who was so successful in the business world and made such great contributions and also was philanthropic. You know, I want to praise that woman who did all of that. And I would say, well, she was a woman, like Maritain said, of a tough mind and a tender heart, clear thinker with compassion. So it's a great way to think of, you know, so what did Maritain said, he wanted to be a saint. Follow what Leon Bloy said, that would be the tragedy, not to be a saint. Well, let's cultivate a tough mind and a tender heart.
One of the things that struck me was his love of art or perspective on art,
yeah.
Meaning there was a transcendence aspect to art. There's a spirituality to
yep.
art.
Yeah, shared that with his wife, Risa, love of poetry, love of art. That was, you know, he put it in a Thomistic framework that what Aquinas would say, what happens is the pursuit of beauty and the creation of art, whether it's painting, literature, and so on, opens up our spirit. It is part of what Leon Bloy called, again, an intuition. In fact, there was another theologian that on intuition, Henry Bergson, who was very influential on Risa and Jacques both. He's the one who talked about intuition. I might have misplaced that earlier, that we have to trust our intuitions in a sense. And what I get out of intuition is there's within us, put it this way, we could say we're wired for God. Mm. You know, there's a hard wiring in us. We're programmed to seek God. Our hearts are, as Augustine said, our hearts are restless till they rest in thee. So that it's that whole thing that that the great thinkers have seen. We're, the only fulfillment in life is to be in touch with God and to respond to God's call, the vocation to be holy. So that's the world of art opened up. Art and Scholasticism was one of his books. And that was his way of getting in touch with God. And Risa, I mean, they loved poetry. They read poetry together. They discussed it and so on. It's like having a friend or a spouse that you can go to the art museum and together and see an El Greco painting like we got in the Toledo Art Museum and to say that touches me.
Right.
That opens us. Honey, what do you get out of that? You know, what do you see? So that it becomes a way of jointly communicating and opening up what I call the dimension of mystery.
You know, what was interesting about Maritain for me was, in your book, most are Catholic priests or a spiritual job in some, but the relationship between Maritain and his wife struck me throughout the chapter you wrote about.
Yeah.
There was a dynamic between the two that created some of the spiritual formings.
Yeah, really, yeah.
And that was different than other chapters that you've written on other theologians.
Yeah, very good insight on your part, yeah. I that's wonderful. They are a good model that way. I mean, not every marriage is going to have that kind of depth and
yes.
so on, obviously, but...
I mean, challenging to try to figure things out in a year or else we got a suicide pact, whether that was just kind of a tongue-in-cheek or they meant they were serious about it.
Yes, that's what I think you picked it up exactly right. They were serious about finding meaning in life. That's what they're looking for. What is the meaning of life?
Yeah.
why are we going to keep studying? Why are we going to keep living? And so we have to find some way.
So to me, from a marriage standpoint, to find someone like that is very rare and special. So yeah. The whole aspect of that chapter about him, I was relating to the marriage aspect.
Yep.
And even not even marriage, just finding someone that you can walk through life together.
Yeah. A friend, a
friend,
partner,
yes. A family
a
member.
Relative. Yeah. 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 I mean, I think we say sometimes we find someone who is a kindred spirit. Yeah,
that's a great way to describe it.
A kindred spirit means that we don't just talk about the Wolverines' victories. We can talk about the way the walk in the park lifts our spirits. Yeah. We can enjoy a walk together, and somehow we come out of it being healthier physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Yeah. You know,
that's a great thing to get out of that. And I didn't stress that enough, but I think that you're right. A great application. So we're going to be Christian humanists, Brad.
That is a great goal.
We're going to be Christian humanists. And we're not going to let the secular humanists make us feel as though we're second class or that we're downers. Or that's what Pope Francis would do. We shouldn't look, as Christians, we shouldn't look like we just came from a funeral all the time. Mm. As Christians, we don't want to just remember Good Friday. We want to remember Easter Sunday and the joy of celebrating the victory of Christ.
Thank you, Brother Basic. This has been great.